This is Doreen Salcy, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to tonight's poetry program.
Eating Habits by Alan Walter. Tomato sauce, I'm at a loss. I simply don't know why. Hardly ever, really never, spots a worn-out tie. But wear a new one, a costly blue one, a fancy silken job. If you're like me, I guarantee, with gravy, you're a slob. Spicy mustard, chocolate custard, everybody knows. Never spill and never will when you're wearing your old clothes. But brand new pants don't have a chance hanging on your hips. Melted cheese with shocking ease drips right off your lips. So let's suppose food really knows when you're dressed up fancy. I'd still conclude that eating nude would be very chancy. Alan Walter was born May 25, 1939, in Chicago. He worked as a teacher for children with special needs before becoming a professor in the Special Education Department at Chicago State University. Mother Doesn't Want a Dog by Judith Viorst. Mother doesn't want a dog. Mother says they smell and never sit when you say sit or even when you yell. When you come home late at night and there is ice and snow, you have to go back out because the dumb dog has to go. Mother doesn't want a dog. Mother says they shed and always let the strangers in and bark at friends instead. They do disgraceful things on rugs and track mud on the floor and flop upon your bed at night and snore their doggy snore. Mother doesn't want a dog. She's making a mistake. Because more than a dog, I think, she will not want this snake. Judith Viorst, born February 2, 1931, is an American writer, newspaper journalist, and psychoanalysis researcher. She is known for her humorous observational poetry and for her children's literature. The Pig by Roald Dahl. In England once there lived a big and wonderfully clever pig. To everybody it was plain that Piggy had a massive brain. He worked out sums inside his head. There was no book he hadn't read. He knew what made an airplane fly. He knew how engines worked and why. He knew all this, but in the end, one question drove him round the bend. He simply couldn't puzzle out what life was really all about. What was the reason for his birth? Why was he placed upon this earth? His giant brain went round and round. Alas, no answer could be found. Till suddenly, one wondrous night, all in a flash he saw the light. He jumped up like a ballet dancer and yelled, "By gum, I've got the answer! They want my bacon slice by slice to sell at a tremendous price. They want my tender, juicy chops to put in all the butcher shops. They want my pork to make a roast, and that's the part'll cost the most. They want my sausages in strings. They even want my chitterlings. The butcher shop, the carving knife, that's the reason for my life." Such thoughts as these are not designed to give a pig great peace of mind. Next morning in comes Farmer Bland, a pail of pig swill in his hand. and Piggy, with a mighty roar, bashes the farmer to the floor. Now comes a rather grisly bit, so let's not make too much of it. Except that you must understand that Piggy did eat Farmer Bland. He ate him up from head to toe, chewing the pieces nice and slow. It took an hour to reach the feet, because there was so much meat. And when he finished, Pig, of course, felt absolutely no remorse. Slowly he scratched his brainy head, and with a little smile he said, "I had a fairly powerful hunch that he might have me for his lunch. And so, because I feared the worst, I thought I'd better eat him first." Roald Dahl, 13 September 1916 to 23 November 1990, was a British novelist, short story writer, poet, screenwriter, and fighter pilot. His books have sold more than 250 million copies worldwide. Cinderella by Roald Dahl. I guess you think you know this story. You don't. The real one's much more gory. The phony one, the one you know, was cooked up years and years ago and made to sound all soft and sappy just to keep the children happy. Mind you, they got the first bit right, the bit where, in the dead of night, the ugly sisters, jewels and all, departed for the palace ball, while darling little Cinderella was locked up in a slimy cellar, where rats who wanted things to eat began to nibble at her feet. She bellowed, "Help!" and "Let me out!" The magic fairy heard her shout. Appearing in a blaze of light, she said, "My dear, are you all right?" "All right," cried Cindy. "Can't you see? I feel as rotten as can be." She beat her fist against the wall and shouted, "Get me to the ball. There's a disco at the palace. The rest have gone and I am jealous. I want a dress. I want a coach and earrings and a diamond brooch and silver slippers, two of those, and lovely nylon pantyhose. Done up like that, I'll guarantee the handsome prince will fall for me." The fairy said, "Hang on a tick." She gave her wand a mighty flick. And quickly, in no time at all, Cindy was at the palace ball. It made the ugly sisters wince to see her dancing with the prince. She held him very tight and pressed herself against his manly chest. The prince himself was turned to pulp. All he could do was gasp and gulp. Then midnight struck. She shouted, "Heck, I've got to run to save my neck." The prince cried, "No, alas, alack." He grabbed her dress to hold her back. As Cindy shouted, "Let me go," the dress was ripped from head to toe. She ran out in her underwear and lost one slipper on the stair. The prince was on it like a dart. He pressed it to his pounding heart. "The girl this slipper fits," he cried, "tomorrow morn shall be my bride. I'll visit every house in town until I've tracked the maiden down." Then, rather carelessly, I fear, he placed it on a crate of beer. At once, one of the ugly sisters, the one whose face was blotched with blisters, sneaked up and grabbed the dainty shoe and quickly flushed it down the loo. Then in its place she calmly put the slipper from her own left foot. Aha, you see, the plot grows thicker and Cindy's luck starts looking sicker. Next day, the prince went charging down to knock on all the doors in town. In every house, the tension grew. Who was the owner of the shoe? The shoe was long and very wide. A normal foot got lost inside. Also, it smelled a wee bit icky. The owner's feet were hot and sticky. Thousands of eager people came to try it on, but all in vain. Now came the ugly sister's go. One tried it on. The prince screamed, "No!" But she screamed, "Yes! It fits! Whoopee! So now you've got to marry me." The prince went white from ear to ear. He muttered, "Let me out of here." "Oh, no, you don't. You made a vow. There's no way you can back out now." "Off with her head," the prince roared back. They chopped it off with one big whack. This pleased the prince. He smiled and said, "She's prettier without her head." Then up came sister number two, who yelled, "Now I will try the shoe." "Try this instead," the prince yelled back. He swung his trusty sword and smack. Her head went crashing to the ground. It bounced a bit and rolled around. In the kitchen, peeling spuds, Cinderella heard the thuds of bouncing heads upon the floor and poked her own head round the door. "What's all the racket?" Cindy cried. "Mind your own biz," the prince replied. Poor Cindy's heart was torn to shreds. "My prince," she thought, "he chops off heads. How could I marry anyone who does that sort of thing for fun?" The prince cried, "Who's this dirty slut? Off with her nut! Off with her nut!" Just then, all in a blaze of light, the magic fairy hove in sight. Her magic wand went swoosh and swish. "Cindy," she cried, "come make a wish. Wish anything and have no doubt that I will make it come about." Cindy answered, "Oh, kind fairy, this time I shall be more wary. No more princes, no more money. I've had my taste of honey. I'm wishing for a decent man. They're hard to find. Do you think you can?" Within a minute, Cinderella was married to a lovely fella, a simple jam maker by trade, who sold good homemade marmalade. Their house was filled with smiles and laughter, and they were happy ever after. Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2, with but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first, and Barrows did the same, a pall-like silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to the hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought, "If only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat." But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a hoodoo, while the latter was a cake. So upon that stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single, to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second and Flynn a huggin' third. Then from 5,000 throats and more there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled in the dell. It pounded on the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat.
There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing, and a smile lit Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. And while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance flashed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone on the stand. And it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the dun sphere flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two." "Fraud!" called the maddened thousands, and echo answered fraud. But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched with hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. Clooney the Clown by Shel Silverstein. I'll tell you the story of Clooney the Clown, who worked in a circus that came through town. His shoes were too big, and his hat was too small, but he just wasn't funny at all. And every time he did a trick, everyone felt a little sick. And every time he told a joke, folks sighed as if their hearts were broke. And every time he lost a shoe, everyone looked awfully blue. And every time he stood on his head, everyone screamed, "Go back to bed." And every time he made a leap, everybody fell asleep. And every time he ate his tie, everyone began to cry. And Clooney could not make any money simply because he was not funny. One day he said, "I'll tell this town how it feels to be an unfunny clown." And he told them all why he looked so sad, and he told them all why he felt so bad. He told of pain and rain and cold, and told of darkness in his soul. And after he finished his tale of woe, did everyone cry? Oh, no, no, no. They laughed. laughed until they shook the trees with ha-ha-ha's and he-he-he's. They laughed with howls and yowls and shrieks. They laughed all day. They laughed all week. They laughed until they had a fit. They laughed until their jackets split. The laughter spread for miles around to every city, every town, over mountains, cross the sea, from Saint-Tropez to Mont-Saint-Denis. And soon the whole world ran with laughter, lasting until forever after. While Clooney stood in the circus tent, with his head drooped low and his shoulders bent, and he said, "That is not what I meant. I'm funny just by accident." And while the world laughed outside, Clooney the clown sat down and cried. Sick, by Shel Silverstein. "I cannot go to school today," said little Peggy Ann McKay. "I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and purple bumps. My mouth is wet, my throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox. And there's one more, that's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut, my eyes are blue. It might be instamatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure that my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My belly button's caving in. My back is wrenched, my ankle sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold, my toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff. My voice is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth. I think my hair is falling out. My elbow's bent. My spine ain't straight. My temperature is 108. My brain is shrunk. I cannot hear. There is a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail, and my heart is... What? What's that? What's that you say? You say today is Saturday? Goodbye. I'm going out to play." An Actor's Revenge by Richard John Scarr. He had positioned himself stage center and was giving the audience his all, when suddenly a seat went up with a crash and a woman walked down from the stalls. And ignoring the audience hissing and the thespians' renderings too, she crossed in front of the footlights and disappeared into the loo. And feeling decidedly slighted, the actor waited enraged. And when the woman came out of the loo, he walked to the front of the stage. Then, adopting a theatrical posture, and in a voice filled with venom and bite that carried its way clear up to the gods, he delivered the best of the night. He said, "Madam, whilst there in the privy, could you hear my excellent King Lear?" "You couldn't? Well, I find that amazing, for we heard you quite clearly out here." Opening Night by Shel Silverstein. She had the jitters. She had the flu. She showed up late. She missed her cue. She kicked the director. She screamed at the crew and tripped on a prop and fell into some goo and ripped her costume a place or two. Then she forgot a line she knew and went meow instead of moo. She heard him giggle. She heard him boo. The program sailed and the popcorn flew. As she stomped off stage with a boo-hoo-hoo, The fringe of the curtain got caught in her shoe. The set crashed down. The lights did, too. Maybe that's why she didn't want to do an interview. Good night, and thank you for listening to tonight's program.
This is Doreen Salcy, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
If you missed your favorite program, you can find it on demand at sunsounds.org. Select Broadcast Info and Audio.